I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings,
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. And I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we have a guest that I grew up in Chicago kind of admiring. His name is Larry Bernstein. And Larry was a real short bodybuilder, but he was very, very muscular, very thick. Kind of reminded me of like a Danny Padilla. And Larry went on to win all the big titles in Illinois, and then he went over to the Mr. America title in 82 and 83. And in 1983, when Jeff King won the AAU Mr. America, Larry Bernstein was the winner in the short class. And then Larry went on to compete in Europe along the lines of Jeff King and John Brown and a lot of those other guys from the AAU. And he was very, very successful out there. He went into the Mr. World contest, the WABA Mr. World. And then he also competed in the NABA Mr. Universe. He competed against Tim Belknap. And he had a really great career during the 1980s. So he's probably a bodybuilder you may not have heard of unless you're familiar with the AAU contest in the 1980s. But I got a chance to see Larry compete in Illinois. And he was very, very thick, very muscular, really impressive physique. So I believe Larry is now living in Arizona, same place Lance Dreher is living. And I got a chance to talk to him. He's a great guy. And I never really knew him that much when I was younger because Larry's a little bit older than me. And I was only a teenager, but I used to look up to him. And there was a bodybuilder from our gym, Hammer's Gym, where I trained at. And his name was John Gust. And I actually trained with John for the 1986 NPC Illinois that I won. And John and Larry were good friends. I think they were about the same age, maybe a year apart. And they trained together and they competed against each other. So those are really the glory days in Chicago bodybuilding in the 1980s. And like I said, Larry went on to do very, very well on the national and international level. So we're going to talk to him in a minute. Before we get to that, though, I do want to mention that we are brought to you by our sponsor, who is Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe title in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner called Vintage Burn. That's the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banut and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order when you go to their website at oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right. So what else is going on with you guys out there? We got no emails last week about Jerry Branum. That was a two-part interview where me and Jerry talked about the most exciting Mr. Olympia contest. And then me and Jerry also branched off into a lot of other different subjects. But I hope you guys like that. I always like talking to Jerry because he's one of our best guests, I think, on the show. He's very intelligent about nutrition, but he also has been around in the sport for a long time. Jerry moved to California in 1968, right before Arnold did. So he got to meet Arnold when Arnold first came to America. We've heard that story on the show before. So if you haven't heard some of those interviews with Jerry Branum, I urge you to go back, you know, either go to the website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com, or you can go check it out on Apple iTunes, because Jerry's really an entertaining guest. He's got some great stories. So thank you again for Jerry for coming on the show. Next week, we got another good guest. His name is Dale Ruplinger. And Dale was the winner of the 1982 NPC USA Championships, and then he went on to compete in the NPC Nationals, the very first NPC Nationals in 1982 that Lee Haney won, and Dale was the winner there also at the middleweight class, and then Dale went on to win the World Championships, the Mr. Universe, also in the middleweight class. So Dale's a very intense guy. He's originally from Iowa. I believe he still lives out there. And I also got a chance to see Dale compete because he was a Midwest guy. And I saw him win the Mr. Central USA in 1981. So next week, we're going to be talking to Dale Ruplinger. So you guys want to check that show out, too. That's going to be a great show. We had a couple birthdays this week. Lou Ferrigno just had a birthday yesterday on November 9th. Lou is now 68 years old. He looks great, very healthy. I want to wish Lou a happy birthday. And in tribute to Lou's birthday, we are going to read from Lou's book. I'm going to read a little excerpt from that book. And this was sent to me by Pat Comer. Pat's one of our great listeners of the show. He always contributes a lot of articles. He sends them to me by email. So thanks, Pat, for doing that. And I just mentioned Lou's birthday yesterday on my Facebook page. So Pat must have saw that. And he scanned some of these pages and sent them over to me. So I'm going to read this. This should be really interesting. So we'll do that right after our interview with Larry Bernstein. So after the interview's over, don't turn the show off. Stick around and we'll read that article from Lou Ferrigno's book in tribute to his birthday. Also coming up this week is Lee Haney's birthday. And Lee is going to be the big 6-0, if you can believe it. Lee was born in 1959, November 11th. So that will be Monday on Veterans Day, which is actually tomorrow from when I'm taping this. And Lee is going to be 60 years old. So happy early birthday to Lee Haney, one of the greatest bodybuilders ever, 8-time Mr. Olympia, and just a really, really great human being. If you never had a chance to meet Lee Haney, if you ever see him anywhere at a bodybuilding expo or contest or whatever, just go up and say hi to him. He's really a great guy. He'll make your day. So one of the real gentlemen in the sport. So we want to wish Lee a happy birthday. I also want to mention, I have a new website up. It's called johnhansonfitness.com. So I had that website called Dad Bod to Rip Bod, but I have now changed that over to John Hanson Fitness. So if you guys are interested getting a personal consultation from me, an online consultation where I can help you with your training and your diet, I used to do it on the Dad Bod website, but now I've got this other website called John Hanson Fitness. So log on to johnhansonfitness.com. And you can get a training or diet or both consultation from me online. I'll get that for you right away. And how that works is I have you fill out a questionnaire. So I have all your information and whatever your goal is, whether you're trying to lose fat, gain muscle, get bigger, whatever, I will help you to achieve that goal. And after I send you the program, I stick with you for 4 weeks. So every week I get in contact with you. I make sure the diet's going good, the training's going good, and I see that you're making progress so you can go forward from there. And if you want, you can also do follow-up programs, which is a little bit cheaper than the initial consultation. And then I can follow you every week. You know, we can do it on a monthly basis, 3 months, 6 months, whatever you like to do. So a lot of people have taken advantage of that and have bought the consultations from me. And I'm going to really be expanding it on this website. I'm also going to start putting some training videos up there. And I'm going to start putting more articles up there. So go and check out johnhansonfitness.com. That's my new website. And my training is going really good. I'm getting a little stronger. I think this was now, I just finished my 4th week of training, my real training, because I had to take 6 weeks off after my hernia surgery, which I had in the middle of August, August 15th, and no training at all for 6 weeks. But luckily, I didn't lose that much size. Gained a little bit of fat maybe just because of the inactivity. But I didn't lose much size, so my strength went down. So I've been trying to slowly build up my strength each week. And this was, like I said, my 4th week of training. And my strength is going up every week, so it's really, really fun. It's fun working out and seeing progress. So I should be able to start getting bigger and stronger as I'm losing the fat, because I just started my diet this week. I want to get in shape for my birthday, which is coming up in March. And I've got about probably 4 inches to lose off my waist, so that's going to take some time. Probably at least 4 months, because you know how it is when you get older. And I'll be 57 years old in March on next year, 2020. So I want to really look great for that. I always use my birthday as a motivation, usually to get in shape, or the Arnold Classic or the Olympia or whatever. Whatever's coming up, I always try to get in shape once or maybe even twice a year. So I haven't been in shape since last year in like November, December. So it's time again to get back in shape. I'm a little bit too bulked up. I like being a little bit leaner, so I'm going to diet down slowly. So I've been really watching my diet this week. I was writing everything down. I think I got to figure it out. I think I know exactly how many calories, how many carbs to eat to just slowly lose that fat as I continue to keep building my strength up and keep building my size up. So I can help you guys with that if you're interested. So just let me know. You can always email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. And if you have any comments about the show at all, you can also use that email, naturalolympia@gmail.com. All right. So before we get to our interview with Larry Bernstein, I also want to mention our other sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939. Again, that's 813-922-8939. Or if it's easier, just go to their website, which is FL for Florida, FLAlternativeMeds.com, FLAlternativeMeds.com. Tell them you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll give you 20% off your order. Well, I did get one letter, one email from Steven. Steven said, "Hey, John, I remember back when I first became interested in bodybuilding, I purchased a muscle and fitness magazine, which, if I recall correctly, had features on Lee Haney, Sergio Oliva, and Bertel Fox. Haney did back. Sergio was featured in his Mr. Olympia prep for the Chicago Mr. O, I think. No, that wasn't Chicago because Sergio competed in the 84 Olympia in New York, and then he did the 85 Olympia in Belgium. Actually, the 85 one was his last contest because the next year he got shot in 1986 and never competed again after that. Anyways, Steven says, I always liked all the bodybuilders from those days in the early to mid-80s. It seemed to me that Bertel Fox was very similar to Lee Haney, except Fox had better arms and legs. Except for Samir's extreme cuts in 83, I don't see who else was competing with Bertel. I wonder what might have happened if Bertel had won in 1983. I think he would have continued to beat and hold off Haney. Bertel's back was able to hang with Haney, and his other body parts blew Haney away. Just Bertel did not seem to pose or cut up very well. Wonder what your thoughts are on Bertel. I mean, no disrespect to Samir or Lee Haney in this at all. Just another brother in iron, Steven. Well, I thought, obviously, Bertel was very, very impressive. Super, super thick and really muscular. I mean, if you look at the pictures of him in the late 1970s when he was competing in the NABBA Universe and he's doing those most muscular poses, God, nobody looked that freaky and that huge. As far as 83, I think Bertel could have placed a little bit higher. It's just I talked about that contest before. It was really a different contest because you had the aesthetic type of physiques like Samir, and you had Muhammad McAway, and you had Frank Zane in his last contest against guys who were bigger and more muscular like Lee Haney and Bertel Fox. And back then, the judges were judging in three distinct rounds. They looked at your symmetry first, then they looked at your muscularity when you hit the compulsory poses, and then they looked at your posing ability in the third round. But of course, they're judging the physique in each round. So anyways, Samir won, and I think Samir deserved to win. I thought Samir was pretty much near perfect that year. He was full, he was big, he was shredded. So with his symmetry, when Samir came in top shape like he did that year, I think it was very, very hard to beat. Haney got third. That was Haney's first Olympia. And Haney was basically the same version of the Haney that would come along the next year, but he was smaller. He was only 230. The next year when he won the Olympia, he was 243. But you could see the symmetry and the shape on Haney, that small waist, the wide shoulders, the huge lats, very impressive physique, and he deservedly got a top three position. Now, where could Bertel Fox placed? I mean, Fox could have been in the top three. He still looked really freaky and muscular, and he was very cut up for that contest, probably the best shape he's ever been in. And the audience was going absolutely crazy for him because they love the beef out there in England. It was in Germany, not in England. And they love the beef, and Bertel had more beef than anybody. But his back, I got to disagree with you, was not as good as Haney's. It was kind of narrow. It was very muscular, very thick, but not as wide as Haney's. And Bertel's legs also were kind of a weak point. They were also kind of narrow. They weren't as developed as his upper body. His posing wasn't as good, but he did make top five, and he probably could have placed a little bit higher, maybe in the top three, if you would have put him ahead of Frank Zane and Muhammad McAway. But Yeah, I don't think if he would have won that year, I don't think he would have continued to win and beat Haney, because I think Haney in the next year, when he weighed 243, would have killed Bertel. So Bertel was really, really good. I just don't think his physique was as complete as you may have thought after watching his posing routine. So you have to look at all parts of the judging, especially the symmetry posing. He didn't do as well there as he did in the muscularity posing. So that probably hurt his placements. And he wasn't really the greatest poser either. Bertel was never a very smooth poser. He had to pose this correctly, of course, but he just wasn't very smooth. So I think that hurt him also, because back then they used to really judge the posing. And if you remember, Muhammad McAway took second, and Muhammad's routine was absolutely amazing. So that's my thoughts on Bertel. I thought he looked fantastic that year. He could have placed maybe a couple places higher, but I don't think he should have been above Samir Banu, who I thought was really just perfect that year. All right, so that is all the emails we got. We only got that one email. So again, if you have any questions, any comments, like Steven did, just write to me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. All right. I also want to mention that we're brought to you by our other sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So you can call them at their office number out here in Tampa, Florida, and it is 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. And please mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you a free consultation. Plus, they will also give you 20% off your first order. So tell Jeff at Florida Alternative Medicine that I sent you.
All right, that's it for our opening. And here is our interview with Larry Bernstein, who was the winner of the short class in the 1983 AU Mr. America. And then he went on to compete and do very well at the NABBA Universe and also the WABA Mr. World over in Europe. Here we go.
All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I have a very special guest with us this week. His name is Larry Bernstein, and Larry is from the Chicago area. So I got to watch Larry compete when I was a teenager and back in the 80s. And Larry was very successful. He won the Mr. America short class, and he also competed in the NABBA Universe and the World Championships out there. So it's great to have you on the phone. Larry, how you doing?
Oh, good, good, John. Thanks. It's great to be on here. I appreciate you looking me up.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're getting all the Chicago bodybuilders. We had Lance Dreher on and Len Kinnear, and now we got you.
Yeah, Chicago represented pretty well, didn't we?
And yeah, we sure did. We had some great bodybuilders out there.
And especially with you hosting it. I mean, does it get any better, Chicago host?
There we go. Right. Let's start from the very beginning. I didn't get a chance to know you as much when I was younger. I knew John Gust, of course, because he trained at Hammers. I knew Glenn. I know you and John were really good friends, and you and Glenn competed at a young age. So what got you into bodybuilding? Like, what age were you when you started?
I got into lifting a little bit around eighth grade, because especially being a short class guy, and when you're younger, you're really small.
Yeah.
I know, because I hear you guys talk about being thinner, but you're still, at least you're like 5'7" or 8". You know, we're like 5'3", 5'4". So we had nothing going on. So we had to balance the field a little bit. So, and I got into actually playing ice hockey. And I was getting pushed around way too much. So I thought, I got to put some muscle on.
Right.
But at least know these big guys hit me. You know what I mean?
What area did you grow up in, Larry?
I was in Glenwood. I don't know if you know Glenwood or Southsider. So I went to like Home and Fossmore.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, cool. You're right by me.
Where were you at?
I grew up in Worth.
Worth. Oh, okay.
Yeah, by Oak Lawn and Chicago Ridge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny because I was thinking, I don't remember seeing you at Quads. That's because you were at Hammers, right?
Yeah, I always went to Hammers.
And I was thinking, why didn't I know John Moore? Because, I mean, you know, you had a great career and you were killing it, but
yeah,
being a few years younger than me, I might have been already moved out by then. I don't know. I can't recall.
Yeah, I think you were at the national level when I was just starting to compete at the state level, I think.
Yeah, kind of lucked out a little bit, so...
So what gym were you training at when you started, Larry?
Well, the funny thing was that so I started in my basement with the Sears and Roebuck weight set, like everyone else. I think I hear you talk to.
Right.
I had the high end one. I didn't have the sand ones. I had the full iron.
Oh, really?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But then, no, so I started lifting in eighth grade, and a friend of mine I met in high school, he said, there's this gym in Chicago Heights you got to go check out, because he knew I was kind of into lifting at that time. Mm-hmm. And it was called, I don't know if you ever heard of it, it was called The Gym. Pretty
yeah,
unique name,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, Gary McCooley owned it. I don't know if you remember him, but it was pretty much powerlifting.
Okay.
But I went there at about maybe 105 pounds if I was lucky. And yeah, I know. And then I saw some, you know, I just saw some of these big guys. I was like, wow, that's what I think I want to do. Because it was just, you know, especially when you're that small, you're like, holy cow, I can be. And the guys that I saw they weren't all that much taller than me. You know, so, you know, like little Danny Padillas or Franco Colombo's, but
yeah,
in the basement of a gym in Chicago Heights.
Wow. What got you into wanting to do bodybuilding? Just when you started working out at the gym, did you see other bodybuilders there?
Well, no, at the gym, it was pretty much strictly powerlifters.
Okay.
And then about a year or two later, I can't remember if it was the same guy or not, he said, you got to check out this quads gym over in Thornton, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, okay, you know, it's a little closer, and I think I might have had my license then, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But going to Davey and Tom's place, they were really cool. They promoted, they were all family-ish and stuff. And
yeah.
But they suggested me going into a show, and that's what's funny. I'm not sure if anyone from that gym had ever even competed, because the first show I went into, I mean, it was so green. I was no tan. I don't even really knew if I dieted correctly. And so I'm thinking maybe I might have been their guinea pig. They're probably like, hey, let's try it out with this guy, you know?
Right.
And the funny thing is, going into my first show, John, I go to, I think it was like a Mr. Teenage Chicagoland or something.
Mm-hmm.
I go to sign in, and the guy says, Bernstein. He goes, you guys own these shows. You don't compete in them.
Oh, God.
I know. I was like, yeah, I fell through the cracks or something. Yeah, you know, what was that? Yeah, so that was like my first introduction. I'm pretty sure I took last.
Really? What year was that, Larry?
So I think I was 17. So it was probably 75 or 6 maybe.
Okay.
Somewhere around there. And the funny thing was, these Chicago shows, I mean, you know, after a while you got to know some of the guys. But back mm-hmm. then, I kept seeing this Glenn Kinnear guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a teenager, and it's like, and he was winning the shows or taking first or second, so he always had good abs and legs, and I was like, wow. And then finally near the end, I think the first show I ever won was a Teenage Illinois, and I beat Glenn Kinnear, which I couldn't believe.
Yeah, I think I saw that picture. You sent that to me, right?
Yeah, I'm sure he probably might have been as surprised as I was, but you know, hopefully I'd improved in a couple of years.
Yeah. So when you started, you were really, really small. And did you grow pretty easily once you started training?
Yeah, I'm pretty fortunate. And, you know, I can put muscle on pretty easy as well as get fat. So pretty easy. So mm-hmm. that's what cracked me up about bodybuilding is you were never fat, really. Back then, anyway, you were either bulked up or you were ripped, right?
Right.
Yeah, so there's no, you're never fat. You were just bulking up, even though it was. But, yeah, I was pretty fortunate. And actually, on my way into, even before I went to the gym in Chicago Heights, our high school had a thing called Animal Farm. I'm sure your school probably had it for the football team in the summer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I would go to that, and I was putting some size on pretty quick from there. So I was kind of fortunate to be able to put muscle on fairly quick. And I know people always think the short guys put on the muscle real fast anyway, because there's there's nothing to fill out, right?
Right. When you were competing in these teenage shows, did the judges give you any feedback once you started to add some size?
A little bit. They're a little bit. I mean, unfortunately, you know, like I said, turning 60 the other day. That's so long ago, John. I could hardly remember which contest they were, where they were. But they tell you a little bit what you needed to do. But the funny thing is, this is something I've heard in some of your other podcasts, too, is from the older guys, obviously. The first show, at the Leaning Tower Y,
mm-hmm.
you probably remember that.
Yeah,
Norman Niles, right?
Yeah.
And they had it with, like, a powerlifting meet. Powerlifting meet was first. The bodybuilders were second. We posed on a, honest to God, I swear it was a pallet. They put us on it. It was just a pallet under a empty light bulb. A light bulb hanging from the ceiling. You know, no music, and talk about sterile and like,
yeah,
walking out there. But the funny, I mean, I was so, you know, I didn't have a clue about bringing my own food and preparing. So they had all these prisoners there for the powerlifting meet. And since I didn't have nothing, they brought all this food for the prisoners. I was asking this one prisoner I got to be friends with, kind of, while we're backstage waiting. I go, hey, man, you mind if I have one of your milks? He goes, no, you know, go ahead, bro. And I go, you're not going to get in trouble. He goes, shit, man, I'm in trouble already.
Right. I'm already in prison.
Yeah. He goes, what? They're giving me an extra year for giving you a milk?
Right.
You know, it's like that's so hilarious. Clueless. It was so clueless. Yeah. But it was a hoot, though. It was, you know. That's what, you know, that's what some of these guys are missing out on, seeing that their beginnings.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, did you ever have to do one of those?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that Teenage Chicagoland, because that was my first show. That was in 79. And I remember they had the prejudging at the Midwest Fitness Center. And yeah, in Chicago. And so we didn't even have the prejudging at a high school. They just moved the weights out of the way, and we stood against the wall.
Oh,
and the
my
judges
God.
Just... They sat in front of us in folding chairs. And Norman Zell, who was the head of the leading tower, yeah, he was one of the judges.
Oh, did they even let you do your own posing routine then?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And I was the same as you. I didn't have any tan on. I was 16 years old. I didn't know what I was doing. And I remember we had our backs to the judges, and the head judge goes, show us your hamstrings. And I heard Norman Zell lean over to the guy next to him, and he goes, they don't have any hamstrings.
Oh, and I know it's kind of great, though. You know what I mean? It's like the bare bones, like the grassroots, right?
Right,
the
grassroots
in Chicago. So that was I know that it was fun, though. Then the funny thing was, I mean, it was such a small audiences back then. I mean, in that show, I think they just put up some folding chairs in maybe the gym of the Leaning Tower Wise, and I could hear some of my buddies from Quad, you know, give him the trophy.
Right.
It was like, yeah, I wasn't even close.
So what was the first show you won then?
The first show I won was the Teenage Illinois.
Oh, the one you beat Glenn. Okay. What year was that?
That was 79, and I was 19 years old. Yeah, I remember I was thinking, okay, you know, just barely, at least I got one win as a teenager. But, you know, that was the good news and bad news, because I think if I hadn't won that, you know, who knows, I would have kept pushing. But, you know, when you win a show, it's like, you know, what a rush, right? I mean,
yeah,
no bigger
absolutely.
Rush.
Yeah.
No bigger rush. So I was like, holy cow. I'm like, I'm so off and running, I guess.
Now, how big was that Teenage Illinois when you won it?
I want to say maybe we had like 17 or 23 competitors at the most. It was a fair amount. And I want to truly believe, John, because Quads put it on, that wasn't the reason I won it.
Mm-hmm.
They sponsored that show in Thornton there, and it was fun. That was back, you know, they had the body parts. But, I was surprised, because Glenn was winning everything back, you know, when we were teenagers.
Yeah, he was. When he was a teenager, he was winning everything.
Yeah. So then that's, you know, put the thought in my head, if I can win as a teenager, if I'm beating, you know, why can't you just keep progressing and keep winning, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Did you have any plans to win Mr. America or anything? Because I know everybody wanted to win Mr. America back then.
Oh, well, at that point, not. I mean, you know, you want to go far. You know, we're all competitors, and you want to take it to the highest level. And I was, you know, I had the idols of all the pretty much the shorter bodybuilders, because you know, being shorter, you always looked at what you could be. So you know, Padilla and Colombo, and I met Platts once when I was younger. He was doing a seminar in Indiana or something.
But, oh, really? How was that?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it was awesome. It was awesome. He was a good guy, real down to earth, and
You
know, open to questions and stuff. But no. So the funny thing was, so that was 79. I won that, and then I think I took a year off, thinking of, you know, going to the next level. I got to put some size on, and I think it was a year or two later, I went to the Junior Illinois, thinking I had it going on still, right?
Right.
No. And then it's funny, I think it might have been Brignoli in one of your podcasts where he said he saw Jeff King sitting in his sweatpants thinking, well, he's got some size. So here was here was that unknown Rockford kid, Tim Belknap, in a sweatpants.
Oh, yeah. And, you know who told me this story was Jim Julian, our mutual friend Jim Julian.
Oh, yeah? I remember Jim.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I remember when that, right around that time, Jim was training at Hammers, and he said, yeah, he goes, Larry Bernstein was in this contest at Junior Illinois, and he goes, he told the story, you know, he was telling me the story, he goes, yeah, you know, Larry's a great bodybuilder, and he goes, he said, there's this fat kid sitting there, and when he took his clothes off, everybody freaked out.
Oh, well, that's what Tim was, you know, he played it pretty well. He was like the last guy to take his sweats off. I still remember this like it was yesterday.
Right.
You know, before you're going on stage, John, you're getting your pump on, you're going crazy, trying to get jacked, right?
Right.
And as soon as he took his sweats off, because his face wasn't even like super lean, like usually
would be. He looked bloated, yeah.
Yeah. But he took his sweats off. I was done. I shouldn't even went on stage. I was so messed up mentally. I was like, wow, I've got a ways to go.
Right.
Yeah, if I'm going to do anything.
I try telling people the story about how freaky he looked, because this is 1980. That's a long time ago. And it's just, he was mind-blowing. He was so huge. Like, a lot of guys are big like that now, but back then he was like one of the few guys that was really that freaky.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you know, unfortunately, as I'm sure you looked into some of my other competitions, that was a sign of things to come for me.
right. You would see him again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm like, son of a gun, I got to fly across the world. You know, this is getting ahead of ourselves a little, to lose to a guy that lives an hour from me in Chicago. You know,
right, like, what the hell? Right.
Couldn't we just done this in the backyard, Tim? I'm like, Jesus.
What was the audience reaction to Belknap when they saw?
Oh, it's the typical. Holy shit! You know, like,
right?
Yeah. I was so glad he moved on. So, you know, like.
Yeah.
That was, you know, it's just the luck of the draw. Like some of these guys say, you don't know who's going to be at the show, whoever shows up, right?
So you were only like 20 years old then, right?
Yeah, I was 20. Yeah, I was 20. I was 20. Mm-hmm. It was right then. I was like, I had to make a decision, like what I was going to do to reach that next level.
Yeah. So what was your training
said,
like?
Right?
What was your training like back then, Larry? I mean, what were you guys doing, 6 days a week training like we all did?
Yeah, I was pretty much doing 6 days a week. And, you know, that's what I really try to emphasize for so many of these younger kids. They ask me about for workout programs. You know, I'm in Arizona and I got a younger son. Well, he's 21, but they're saying, hey, Mr. B, can you write me a program? So I get him a program, but I told him, you got to find a training partner, you know, because you know how it is, John.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're all pretty self-motivated, but you get someone else to compete with, you know, on the bar and squat rack.
That's what makes it fun, right?
Yeah. So I was training 6 days a week at Quad's gym, and it was so competitive in there. I'm sure, you know, Hammers was the same way because they both produced really good bodybuilders.
Yeah.
And so every time you went in there, I mean, it was like, you know, you'd see guys you'd be competing with, or even guys, there were so many good guys that never competed, you know?
Right.
And you're like, holy cow. So, I mean, it wasn't like, what was that show on Netflix? You wrecked West Side Barbell or something?
Oh, yeah. With Louis Simmons, yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't quite like, I don't think it was like that, but it was pretty hardcore. It was pretty hardcore.
So, who were the guys in there back then, the quads, back in the early 80s?
Shoot, it wasn't Gust. I remember John LaRue. He was a black guy.
Oh, yeah, he was great.
Yeah, he was good. Tim Smith, I remember him back then, his brother Brian.
Yeah.
It's funny, too, because, you know, I mean, I'm pretty fortunate with the symmetry I've got. Because, you know, being a 5'3", if you're, like, long torso, short torso, it's not really going to come off too well. You know, like,
Labrada,
his balance is awesome, and some of these, so I remember some of those guys giving me crap because I was winning shows and, you know, I'd be about 160, 165, maybe.
Right.
You know, these guys, you know, 190, 200, and they're like, oh, there's 120 pound Larry. I'm like, hey, dude, I moved on. You haven't.
Right.
Go think about it. You know, I just, hey, you got to work with what you got. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
How did you meet John Gust?
John, either it was through some shows or it must have been through competing. Yeah. He's a year or two younger than I, and he didn't live that far from me. And once we did a few shows, then we kind of got to hang out a little bit, and he'd come over and I never forget, he came to my house once. I'm dieting for some show. He brings in his like Whopper and fries and a milkshake, and he's just eating there in front of me. I'm like, really, bro? He's like, what? I'm not competing, man. I was hungry. I'm like, so yeah, but yeah, if you remember Chicagoland, it was always like Gus and Rody and Munson and I and at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
At least once Belknap moved on.
Yeah. So you won the Teenage Illinois in 79 and Gus won it in 80 because I was in the Teenage Illinois in 1980. I was, I think, 17. And so Gus won the overall that year. Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I might have been at that.
Yeah, you probably handed out the trophies, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. The trophy handout reminded me of another funny story, but I'll get to that a little bit if you want.
All right. So you go into that Junior Illinois, and Belknap blows you away. Where did you go from there, Larry?
I went and hid in the gym for like 2 years, I think.
Oh, really? You trained for 2 years?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. A year and a half, 2 years. I was like, oh, man. Yeah, because that was 80 or 81. And then I came back in 82, and 82 was a really good year because I learned a lot and took on some different – I don't know if I trained much different. Yes, I went back in 82, and I think I won the Junior Illinois and the Mr. Illinois,
mm-hmm.
the Collegiate Illinois, maybe the Central – I think, was that the Central USA where Rody won the overall that year?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, Central USA, right.
That's what blows me away, John. You're so good at remembering all these shows.
right.
I know you have some cheat sheets. I know you have some cheat sheets, but still.
Right.
But, yeah, because I remember the post – it was Gus – Munson, Rody, and I and John and I were like, one of us can beat Rody, but we didn't. But
what year was that? That was 81.
No, I think that might have been 82.
82, yeah.
I think it was 82. Yeah, well, yeah, because that same year, I mean, this is crazy. I was having a really good year, and then you remember John Grimmick, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah. I think I don't know who, either Ira Hurley or Dave DeYoung or someone got him to write me a letter, tell me I needed to go in the Mr. America that year.
Oh, really? Wow.
Because I wasn't planning on it at all. I wasn't planning on it at all. I went to the Junior America that year and I ended up winning my class. I think Mike Antorino won the overall at that.
Okay.
But I got a letter from Grimmick and I was like, seriously? He goes, yeah, just go. I'm hearing good things about you. It'd be a good experience for you in second, and I think that's when I took second to Mike Sable that year. So I ended up going in Harris, Worcester, or I think it was in Worcester.
Yeah.
Cliff Sawyer put it on. Remember Cliff Sawyer?
Okay. Yeah, that was the first year, 82. That was the first year they split from the NPC, right? Because the NPC had the Nationals and then the AAU had the Mr. America.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I couldn't recall the exact year. All I remember was I'd always, been competing in AAU, and I didn't really, I was like, why am I going to switch this?
Yeah, Chicago was all AAU back then, and there wasn't any NPC shows, around.
No, not at all. Not even, because, I listen to the other podcasts. I hear these, these guys that would switch or ask to switch, and I was like.
Right, that was right.
Back then, I didn't even knew it as an option.
Yeah. So you really jumped up then from 80 to 81, and then from 82, your physique must have really improved. So that year and a half off, it must have really made a big difference.
It did, yeah. In 82, it went good. I just was lifting heavy and concentrating on putting size on because, after seeing Belknap, the writing was on the wall. This is like the future,
This
is what's going to be dominating the short class. You got to be freaky.
Right.
Yeah.
So what did you weigh back then, Larry, and when you did that Mr. America when you got second to Mike Sable?
Believe it or not, I was only like about 165.
Wow, really?
Right in there. But, at 5'3", and, cut down, that's pretty good. And it's like, it's the classic physiques you're talking about. Not that I was, I kept trying to get a little bit bigger, but I wanted to keep the balance. And
Yeah.
You know, it worked well.
Yeah, we all did that, right? Back then, I mean, it wasn't just about size. It was like, yeah, everybody wanted to get bigger, like you said. But, you know, we all wanted to have that symmetry and shape and the good posing and all that.
Yeah. And fortunately, at least for me at the time, I guess it went by height class and not weight classes, you know, so you kind of get away with being that much at that height and not, you know, competing against a, you know, like if you think about it, Belknap probably would have been in the light heavies or something.
Oh, yeah. Or heavies. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Or middleweight. And I probably would have gone down to lightweights if that was the case, you know.
Yeah. Well, if you're 5'3", 165, you're probably about the same as Padilla was, you know, back then.
That, exactly. Yeah, I was listening to Padilla's podcast with you. I was thinking, right on, man. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Like, all right. You know, I'm not, you know, I don't know if I was a giant killer like he was, but.
Right.
I'll take it. And you know, and they say Jews and Italians are pretty close, right? It's a fine line.
Right. So how did you feel when you went in at Junior America that Antorino won? You won your class. You won the short class.
Oh, I was blown away. There was a guy there named Donald King, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because I've never heard or seen of him again. I tried researching him after because we talk about this, and I knew our interview was coming up. But I saw him, and he was one of the first guys like with the sweats off. Maybe he's trying to intimidate. He looked really good. I was like, wow.
Oh, really?
Probably good. Yeah, I was like, wow. He's. But you know, I don't know about you, but I never. Maybe I underestimate myself. You know, you try to reach a level, and you don't think you're as good. And
you're
best.
You're never good enough. Yeah.
Yes. Matter of fact, that's what really helped me, that Junior America, not, of course, winning the class. But what happened was, John, was really cool. The day after the show, can't remember his name, a photographer from Muscular Development said, hey, let's do a photo shoot by this fountain in front of the hotel the next day. So so I was like, you know, right on. Let's, you know, no one ever asked that. So I was doing that. And then that ended up being the cover for Muscular Development.
Wow.
And that came out, you know, they would take a few months. That came out just a few months before that 83 America. So I was like, oh, thank you.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean?
That's perfect. Yeah.
It helped because I watched the video from the 83 America and there were some good guys. And, you know, when it's so close, maybe those guys seen on the cover of a month or two ago might have helped.
Right.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Publicity helps, right?
So that was really fortunate. I was like, that was a nice surprise. And then to see it get a cover, I was like, you know, like you said, you always hope to get it. And then you're like, wow, when it happens, you're blown away.
Right, right.
You've been on like two or three of them, right?
Yeah, I made a couple myself too, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the thing back then. That's what we all wanted, right? We all wanted to be in the magazine or definitely make a cover. I mean, that's like the ultimate.
Oh, yeah. First, you just wanted to see your name, even the results from in a show.
Yeah, right.
And then... you know, like when Kevin Noble who was doing that? Wasn't Kevin doing that Illinois magazine, or was that Ira Hurley? I can't remember.
That was Ira Hurley. Yeah,
Ira Hurley. Yeah,
that's funny cool. Because I went to my parents' house in the summer. I had a wedding to go to, and I got all my old magazines in the crawl space in their basement. So I crawled in there and I was grabbing some old ones. I grabbed some old Iron Man, and I got all those ones from Ira that I collect. I still got them. So that was great, man. I was looking back at some of those old pictures. Those were awesome.
Those are classic.
Yeah, they really are.
Man, you know, the funniest Ira story for me, and I remember him standing on stage trying to explain, like, before a prejudging meeting, how to do abdominal poses and stuff. And if you remember, he kind of had that belly, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we were like, seriously, Ira? Oh, that was too funny. That was awesome. You know, God bless him. He did a lot for us.
Yeah, he did. I called him up when I was six. I did that Teenage Chicagoland when I was 16, and I didn't know what I was doing. And I called him up afterwards, and he just ripped me apart. Like, oh, you don't have this, you don't have that. And I'm like, oh, man, if I felt bad about placing six, I felt worse after I got off the phone with him, you know?
Oh, that's hilarious, John.
That guy never held back. Like, if he ever gave you a compliment, it was like you really knew you were good, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now that you mention it, I don't remember ever getting much from him. You know?
Yeah,
He helped out with photos and stuff. But, yeah, as far as I can't remember. Maybe there were some nice words in his magazines. You know, if you won the show, hopefully he'd say something decent about you.
Right.
But I don't
know.
So yeah,
How was that America that Rufus Howard won? What do you remember from that?
Oh, in 82.
Yeah, in 82.
Know, I can hardly remember it, to be honest with you, because it was, you know, so long ago, and I just remember I was kind of upset losing to Mike Sable, because that was the first time I lost that whole year. I was on a roll.
Yeah.
And you know, Mike, he's a great guy, actually. Him and I did a lot of seminars and guest posting together in United Kingdom.
Oh, okay.
A year or two later, when his promoter had us over and put us up. But yeah, I always thought his legs were great, but I thought I had him upper body. But anyway, that's all, you know, mm-hmm. in the past. Yeah, but I remember Rufus was an awesome guy, and I'm trying to remember Abe Cuesta in the medium class.
Yeah.
I remember guys from that, but I don't remember the specifics that well, unfortunately. Maybe because I didn't win, I put it out of my mind, John.
There weren't a lot of guys from Chicago in that year, were there? I mean, Phil Rohde won the medium tall, but other than that, look at the list now. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of Chicago guys.
The other Chicago guys I remember showing up there might have been Tim Bell and Jeff Munson, but they might have been 83 or 4.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. Tim Bell was in 82. He got fifth.
Yeah, he was another one that came to quads from Joliet. He'd drive over.
Yeah.
And that was – it's funny. I don't know about at Hammers, if you guys had this, but Saturdays at quads was like – it was a big day. Everyone would show up, you know, mm-hmm. from everywhere. And
yeah,
usually for some
that's
reason,
how Hammers was, too.
Was it?
Yeah, yeah. You'd get guys coming from other gyms, and somebody was in from out of town. That was the day that everybody showed up. You're right.
Isn't it? Yeah, and it was like, man, it was like game on that day. It was like some serious
the
air. And I don't know about Hammer. I trained there a couple times, but I can't recall.
Uh-huh.
But like at quads, Tommy and Davey would have – they had speakers, you know, as big as me back in the day. And you could hardly – talk to your training partner. You know, they had heavy metal just cranked.
Right.
It was awesome. You know, it was awesome.
Yeah.
It got you pumped.
Yeah.
So you know, nowadays I'd be like, turn that down, goddamn.
Right.
You know, seriously.
So tell me about 83 then. That was the year you won your short class, or you won the short class at the Mr. America. And that was the year Jeff King won. And also, Larry, I want to thank you for setting me up with that interview with Jeff King, because I couldn't get a hold of him forever. So thanks for setting me up with that.
My pleasure. He's such a great guy. Actually,
he really was. He was a great guy.
Yeah, he's a hoot. You get him started, and man, he's got stories. But no, that's what I was fortunate too, because actually, my game plan, John, was so funny. I'd never been to Disney World, and mm-hmm. the '83 America was in Florida, it was in Tampa.
Tampa.
Okay. Yeah, my mindset was I'm going to this show. My family came. If I win, I get to go to the Mr. Universe, which would be awesome. If I lose, we're going to Disneyland. Usually, it's the Super Bowl winners say, I'm going to Disneyland, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
I'm going to be the loser that goes to Disneyland. But
right.
No, it came down to actually another Illinois guy in that show took fourth, I think. It was Al Kirsch.
Yep, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because they interviewed us before the night show to hand out and Ken Passarillo,
mm-hmm.
remember him? Yeah, he was doing an interview, and he's like, "How do you, you know, asking us each how you think you did?" And I just remember, we all want to win, but you just got yourself in your best shape, and whatever the judges say, that's what you got to accept, right?
So yeah, right.
Yeah, but that's where I was going with the trophy handout. Oh my gosh! So it's not, you know, it's bad enough we're short class. We're, you know, we're shorter than everyone there. Mm-hmm. The guy handing out the trophies at that, John, was Ben Davidson. You remember him?
Oh, the football player?
6'8" football player.
Yeah, wasn't he? He was in Conan the Barbarian, right?
Probably. I don't know. But all I remember, I was like, you know, I was feeling so good. Then all of a sudden, I felt like, you know, Adam Ant,
this huge dude
handed the trophy. But ended up winning the class there, which was awesome. Posing down with Jeff King and Marty Vranikar and Jesse Goudreau.
Right.
That year. And then, you know, it was pretty obvious. Jeff was just, you know, he's just so incredible. But he's such a good guy. You don't mind getting beat by him, fortunately. You know, if he was a piece of work, it'd been different. But
yeah,
he was good.
I tried to tell Jeff when I was doing the interview how awesome he was. And I remember, like, all the guys at Hammers, I told Jeff this in the interview, that in 1984, the year after he won the America, we had a bunch of guys from the gym, or a bunch of guys from Illinois went to the America. And I remember everybody would always talk about Jeff King. You know, like, this is the guy. Look how incredible this guy is. This is the contest we're going in. This is the guy we got to beat, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's, yeah, he's, Yeah, especially, I mean, I was fortunate with him too. We did, I got the, because we both won the same, you know, time. We went over to the Universe, and mm-hmm. then the same promoter who had Sable and I going around, he had Jeff King there for a while too. So we went and did some seminars and guest posing and stuff together. It was just a hoot.
Yeah.
Just,
so tell me about that Universe. Tell me about that Universe. Was that your first time in England?
It was my first time. I was like, you know, I'd never even been out of the country, I don't think. Maybe to Canada or something. But, right. Flying over there, you had to fly to Heathrow, and then they put you on a train. I came out in the middle of London by myself, not knowing where the heck I was.
Wow.
And all I remember, John, it's funny, and these two guys got to be good friends of mine. I walk out of the underground carrying these two big suitcases, you know, because I was there mm-hmm. for a few weeks. And these two, Ramsford Smith and Owen Neal, they were both two English bodybuilders.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they recognized me or something. They came up to me and they said, "Hey, man, let us help you with that." And they both grabbed my bags. I'm thinking, I'm not even here for 5 minutes and I've been robbed. These guys are going to take my stuff. And they walked me right to the they walked me to the hotel, and they were the best. Oh, I got to be such good friends with those guys.
Really? That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. But I remember thinking, what the heck? I'm not here. My stuff's gone. But so it was my first time over there. We were supposed to be there for 10 days. So I go to the Universe. I think I took third.
Yeah.
I think it was Terry Phillips, Mike Sable, mm-hmm. and then myself.
You're right, yeah.
And the funny thing was, I didn't get this one, John. Maybe you could explain it. Sable was in the medium class in the Universe the year before. So, I mean,
oh, really?
Yes, how do you shrink in a year? I mean, come on.
Right. That's wild.
So that blows me away. And then Terry Phillips, you know, he's 44 at the time.
Yeah.
He wins the short class, and I'm thinking, what the hell? I'm 23. I'm losing to this 44-year-old grandpa, you know?
Right.
Just when I thought I was back, had it going on again, I'm getting beat by an old guy. First Belknap, right. Then this older dude. So, yeah. Oh, yeah.
How did he look, Terry Phillips?
Oh, he looked hard as a rock. He was shredded.
Yeah.
But, you know, gentleman to the max. And
mm-hmm.
It was a ride. And, you know, this might be a smidge crude, but I just remember – standing around in a circle talking to him and a few other guys, and, you know, with all the supplements dudes were on back then, liver pills, kelp, all that crap, you know. We're just standing there. And out of the blue, obviously someone had, you know, fired one off, right? And Terry Phillips goes, all right, who dropped their guts, mates? I had never heard of that, and I would just laugh. I don't know who it was, but
who dropped
it was
their
nasty
guts.
And funny at the same time, you know?
Right.
Weird the things you remember, right?
Right. Yeah, those liver tablets were the worst. I remember taking 30 of those a day.
Yeah. Yeah, do people even take those anymore? Did those disappear?
No, I don't think so. I think Beverly International still sells them, but not like the way we took them, you know? I remember everybody was taking them back then.
Yeah, you're taking boatloads. It was crazy.
Right.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it was crazy.
I take 10 for breakfast, 10 for lunch, and 10 for dinner.
yeah. And then you'd be dropping your guts all week, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. No, so, that Universe went well. I mean, I was, you know, over in the UK, over there, you've been over there, and these other bodybuilders have told you, you're like mm-hmm. a freaking rock star. It's crazy.
Yeah, the audience was great, huh?
Yeah, well, the audience was good there, but actually they're at some of the other shows, like some of the guest posing spots you got to do, different little places, they all had these big pubs in the back of the auditorium.
Oh, really?
So, John, these people be so hammered, you know. A guy who probably took fifth at the teenage, you know, Mr. Kentucky, you know, teenage, who knows what, he could get on stage mm-hmm. and they make him like a rock star. Someone
right.
standing up there. People
right.
just yelling for him. Oh yeah, but
that's crazy.
No, but it was cool. The Universe, they throw a good party afterwards, you know. So everyone's dressed up. And, yeah, they had a good dinner, and that's when you get to sit down and talk to the judges and ask, you know, talk a little bit, and got to know Oscar Heiden's family. He was awesome. All those guys were over there.
Yeah. Wow. What great history too, because that contest has been going on since 1950. And all the legends have won that show, so it must have been great to be in that show.
Oh, well, it was neat getting this, like, you know, I got to meet Eduardo Kowak, and
he was
a really cool guy, a real fun guy. And then I got to know John Brown out there. Matter of fact, him and I went to lunch once.
Mm-hmm.
We went to McDonald's, and here I am bringing all my chicken breasts and my, you know, all my stuff, and he's just ordering off the menu, telling me if he didn't eat like that, he'd look like a tennis player.
Right.
So, yeah, John's
an interesting guy. I did an interview with him. He was a really good interview.
Oh yeah, yeah. I listened to that recently. No, I listened to all of them. They're great. It's so
okay.
Cool. Oh yeah, it's so cool hearing everyone's stories. And the funny thing is, like, I listened to the way that some of them were training, and I'm like, man, maybe I should have, you know, changed some of my training up back then or something, or tried mm-hmm. something different. Man, I can't complain. I had a nice run, but you know, it's like, maybe that's what was missing. But
back then we all learned from each other, right? I mean, there was aside from what we read in the magazines, there was no internet. So everybody just learned from talking to other people, you know?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. You go watch them, you see this and that. And then, you're trying to figure it out. Yeah. And of course, Dave and Tom at Quads were big helps. And funny enough, Tom at 6'5", him and I were training partners for one summer.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
How was he to train with?
Oh, he was great. He was such a big goofball. He was hardcore and nutty at the same time. And I just missed that guy.
Yeah, Tom passed away, right? A few years ago?
He did at 50 years old. So way too early.
Yeah, he was a great guy.
But he actually did well in the movies. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I do. I do remember that. Which ones was he in? Was he in Steven Seagal movie or?
He was in some Chuck Steven Norris? Seagal movie. He was in a Mr. T movie.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember some of the other ones. But, as a matter of fact, he was in the one where the kid, it was a baseball movie where the kid broke his arm at 10 years old, and then he was throwing something. He was on the New York Mets.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny. He had some lines in there. He was a hoot. him and Davey. Davey's the best. But...
So what was this world championship, the WABA World Championship? You also did that one in 83, right?
No, the WABA World Championship I won in 85.
Okay.
And that actually, it's kind of funny. That was in, I think, Worcester, Massachusetts. That was back here in the States. And I was in the UK training or doing guests. So I flew back here for that. And,
Did you do it in 83 too, Larry?
You know, I did some world championships in 83. I think it was WABA. It might have been in Switzerland or something.
Okay, yeah. And Flavio Baccanini, he won.
Was he the Italian guy? The real
short Italian guy. Yeah.
You know, that blew me away. I've never competed and get beat by a guy shorter than me.
Right.
Oh, my God, John. But he was dialed in, man.
Yeah.
I think that show might have been in Italy or Switzerland. You know, it's like
I remember that guy when he competed in the IFBB, and he was real short, but always ripped, always rock hard. Yeah.
Oh yeah, all the Italian guys were like they were hard as rock and looked good. And matter of fact, that's what I was going to tell you about the same with the French guys. But I did like three or four world championships. Funny enough, I took second to Belknap at one of the world championships. I think it was like in Yugoslavia or something. And I remember, and that's when I had taken second to him at the Universe like 2 weeks before that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him saying to me, he goes, "You must really hate me, man." Because, you know, he's beating me at all these shows. I've been like, you know, we have all these titles. But maybe
it's funny. I had the videotape from, Wayne Glass from Australia. He was filming a lot of those shows over in England. And he had the videotape of that 84 Universe. So I bought it from him and I was watching it. And they showed the prejudging when all you guys came out in short class. And there was a lot of guys. I don't know how many guys, but there must have been 20, 25 guys. So they're lining up, coming out across the stage. And the camera is over to the right. And then Belknap comes out on the left. And all of a sudden, you can hear the crowd go, "Whoa!" Like everybody's just freaking out. You can just hear all this noise rise up from the crowd. And the camera swings over to the left. And you see Belknap standing there. He just looked like such a freak. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Hey, John. Thanks for reminding me, bro.
Yeah. Because I think you were like three guys away from him looking at him.
Dude, no, I was standing next to him.
Oh, you were? Yeah, you were. You were
right
there.
I was standing next to him. You know, I was like, I had everything as flexed out as it can go, and I knew I was.
Right.
I thought something was going to explode, man.
He was just out of
nothing
level.
Left.
It was unbelievable.
Like, ah. Yeah, because that was 84.
Right.
He didn't win the overall that year. Who?
Brian Buchanan.
Brian Buchanan, yeah. What a freak he was.
Yeah.
Another good dude. Really good dude. Yeah, he was.
Really? Yeah. Yeah, he's
oh, yeah. Guy. Most of those guys were solid, you know. But then in 85, I took second to Belknap again. That's when he won the overall, I think. Didn't he?
Let me check here. At the Universe?
Yeah. I think that's
when
he might have won the
you're
overall.
Right. Yeah, you got second. He won the overall, yeah.
But, yeah, the only thing good about 84 was I think I beat Terry Phillips.
Yeah, you got second. You beat Terry Phillips and Joe Gomes. And Mike Quinn beat
Joe
Miko in the medium class.
Joe Gomes, that's right.
Yeah, because I think Joe Gomes won his class at the America that year, didn't he?
I think he did. Matter of fact, that's what was – it's kind of funny looking back at some of these records. You know, you forget down the line because I think it was a year later maybe – that when I beat Vic Terra, and I know Terra became a freak.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, he was
and then
great.
And there was one other show I beat him at, too. I was like, wow, he, you know, I'm glad he killed it later on after.
right. He was a young guy, too, right? When you were competing against him, wasn't he real young?
He was. He was a couple of years younger.
Hey,
you make me feel like the old man here, bro.
No, I remember when he was, I think when he won the America, he was real young.
He probably was. When I was competing against him, when we saw each other, you know, I think that I might have been 25. He might have been 22 or 1.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was younger. But, So that was wild. Then I finally started going downhill, I think, by 86 or 7.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I hate to bring that up, but the 86 I lost to Sammy Ioannidis, right?
Yeah.
No, 83, 45, 86. Yeah, those are all my second places. Then 87 is when I think third or fourth. I think that's when Scalise showed up and someone else. I can't remember.
What did you think of Mike Quinn and Joe Miko in 84?
Oh, Quinn was a freak.
Yeah.
Quinn was a freak. He was awesome. Matter of fact, him and I got to travel together quite a bit, too. He was part of that same promoter in the U.K. who took us on and took us around to shows. But Miko was impressive as all get out. You know, he was so balanced. And I mean, is there a more boy next door look than Miko?
right.
I mean, come on. How does a guy like that not get the, you know, the vote of the UK? They're, you know, they're like, oh, that's
right,
a beach boy
right.
with muscles.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Quinn was just enormous. And when I saw his arms, I was like, what is he doing in this? You know, he should be pro, man. I was like, he's going to catapult.
So, well, it's funny because Mike got third in the America, and I think Joe won, of course, and then I think Abe Cuesta beat him, and then they go to the Universe, and then Mike wins, and Miko takes second, and Cuesta only got fifth. So he really got his revenge in that show. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, different judging panel, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never know, but I know. Yeah, Abe Cuesta was a hoot, too. I remember him, he competed a lot trying to get after it, like a lot of us.
Yeah, he was from Tampa, Florida, too, I think.
I think you're right. Yeah, him and Marty Vranikar was from that area.
Yeah.
I remember he won the talk class, and he came. I remember he went over to the Universe, and he was fun to hang with. Him and Bob Reese.
Yeah, he was a big dude. He was from Wisconsin, wasn't he?
I think so.
Yeah, he's a Midwest guy.
All I remember is, so it's funny, John, not sorry to be jumping all over the place, but this thing has come back to me. After the Universe, that first year in 83, they had set up like a tour for us. We took a bus to Holland. There was some competition, I think, in Holland. We were there for a little while. So I'm just walking the streets, like with Jeff King and Bob Reese, and I think Bob Jockwitz was there and someone else. But Jeff King goes into the store and he buys a loaf of cinnamon bread. Cinnamon raisin bread. And I swear 2 minutes down the way, I go, hey, Jeff, let me have a piece of that. And he goes, it's gone. That thing was like that.
He ate the whole loaf.
Whatever, right? So then we're walking some more and we're like, Bob Reese goes into this McDonald's. He buys 8 hamburgers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what the hell? And so I go, hey, Bob, I go, not that I was hitting everybody up for food, but right. he put all 8 patties between one bun and ate it.
No way.
Okay. That's what I mean. The stuff, remember I told you I had some stories, John. It's
yeah. Crazy. Oh, I interviewed John Lloyd. You remember John Lloyd? He was a competitor from California. He did really well at the USA. He got second to Strider 1 year. But he told me the gym he was training at, I think he was managing a gym out in San Francisco. And he said Bob Reese was living out there for a while. And he was telling me the weights this guy used was just freaking incredible. He was so strong. He said he'd come in the morning drinking chocolate milk and eating donuts. And he'd lay down on the bench and he'd warm up with 315. And then he'd get to like 5 plates easy. And he was just handling it like it was like 1 plate. It was just crazy.
Oh, I believe it. He was so thick. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
he had that muscle. Mm-hmm. And such a nice, a soft-spoken dude for such a huge, guy, super gentleman. He was kind of quiet, but he was great to hang with. Yeah, did he win his class? I think he took second or third. I can't remember.
At the N83?
Yeah.
Yeah, he got third behind Vince Brown. Vince Brown won the class.
Oh, because those are some tough classes, man. I look back on holy cow, those things were stacked.
Yeah.
I was like, man, yeah. I'm glad I was kind of like two and done.
What were those tours like when you went on the tours? How long were you guys gone, and where did you visit?
Well, the funny thing was we were supposed to be over for 10 days. That was, we left the States. They had this thing set up, and then this manager, the guy who owned this gym in Swindon, England, asked me if I'd be interested in helping run his gym for a while because he had to leave for 3 months or something like that.
Hmm.
And I was like, I never knew if I'd ever make it back to UK or Europe or everything. I just wanted to see as much as I could. Being a kid south side of Chicago, what have we seen, right?
Right.
So I was like, sure. So I took him up on that. And that's when he brought Sable and Quinn. And I think Jeff King, too, at the time. But that got to be pretty fun because he had us doing seminars and guest posing all the time, nonstop. But the one story I was going to tell you for sure and make sure I get this in, which is unbelievable. So I think he had set up a seminar for us somewhere in England, and it was like a Saturday afternoon or evening, and he had us booked to do a guest posing at some show in Scotland that night. And he realized it was going to be late. We weren't going to make the Scotland thing. We were running behind or something.
Mm-hmm.
So he calls the Scotland police department and asks if we can get a police escort from the airport to the bodybuilding show because we're that far behind. I mean, that's so, and they agreed to it. So we land in Scotland to these police cars on the tarmac. We get off the plane into the police cars, and they got their sirens, and they're flying like it's some emergency. And to this day, I still can't believe it even happened.
Wow, that's crazy.
And then you show up to this bodybuilding show, John, and people are, they've been drinking for hours and we're late. it was insane. It was just
what were the crowds like back then?
Oh, they were rowdy and happy. They cheered a lot. They were good. They were really good.
Yeah.
The funny thing was, like some of these seminars, you think these people are there to really hear what you want to tell them about training and nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And this one woman, I remember I asked her, I said, did you have a question? Because it looked like your hand up. She goes, oh, no, I just like to listen to you talk because I like your accent.
So she had nothing. Chicago accent, huh?
Yeah, it was like, well, Chicago or U.S.
United
or,
States, yeah. Right.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. But these people, too, these gyms, like, you'd go to, like, the smallest little town in the U.K. on the, middle of nowhere, kind of, or way off somewhere. They would, like, take stuff off the walls to give you presents. Like, here, take this.
Wow,
take
really?
This.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. They'd have mugs engraved with your names on it, and, they set up these big banquets, and so it was – they were unbelievable.
Wow.
That's what I said. It made you feel like you were a real deal.
Right. What a great time to be a bodybuilder, right? In the 80s.
It was, knock on wood. Yeah, those people, they appreciate it. It was pretty cool. That's like.
So did you take up that guy on his offer to run that guy's gym for 3 months?
Oh, yeah. So what I did, I stayed there. He put me up with a couple that they train at the gym. Mm-hmm. And he had other people that managed the place and stuff. But I think his angle more was just to have, like, you know, some big name bodybuilders at his club, and it would draw more people.
Yeah.
So I got to know it pretty well. Matter of fact, I ended up staying with that couple for the next 5 years. I went over. They're such nice people.
Wow.
Yui and Rose. And which actually this kind of leads me to another funny story. A guy in Germany brought me over, and he knew nothing about bodybuilding, John. I don't know. He had a gym. I think it was an investment for him. And he had heard another gym in town had a big bodybuilder there, so he wanted someone to, you know what I mean? Some people would come to his gym, right?
Right, right.
Well, knock on wood, I can't complain. My career was pretty good. I made it kind of far. Well, the other bodybuilder at the other gym was Lee Haney.
Oh, really?
I'm like, hey, the guy's name was Helmut. I said, Helmut, I hate to sell you, but I want to be at that other gym. I'd rather see Lee right. Haney than myself.
I want to go see Lee Haney. Right.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think I told all the gym members, come with me. We're going to meet the Mr. Olympia.
Right. That's crazy.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It was
so
insane.
What were you doing for a living back then, Larry, in Chicago? What were you doing? You went to school, right? You went to
college? To Eastern Illinois. I graduated from Eastern Illinois with a marketing degree. And then, funny enough, when I graduated from there, I got a job at the Chicago Health Club. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, and a friend of mine said, hey, I can get you in Chicago Health Club. And that's where I kind of knew Lance Dreher in the past from the shows, but he was working for the club as well. So we'd meet at some meetings. And funny enough, working at Chicago Health Club, I got myself in a little trouble because I'd already won the Illinois, and some guys are there like, man, you know, when do you train over here? When, you know, what's the workout? And I'm like, well, I don't train here. What do you mean you don't train here? I go, well, there's this quad gym down there. That didn't go over too well with management.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You know? Well, you know, you needed that atmosphere and that hardcore.
Yeah, you're not going to get a good workout at Chicago Health Club. No way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as much as I try, you know, and so I got to talking to you more than once about that, put it that way.
Right.
Yeah, so I was working there, and then funny enough, though, John, I was spending a lot of time in the U.K. I stayed over there for almost 2 years on and off, just doing the seminars and guest posing.
I didn't know that. Wow.
I didn't do as good as John Brown did with the posing and the disco and stuff.
But. Right, right, yeah. He was telling me his stories. It was crazy. He would go out there for like a few weeks, and he'd be doing the discos, and then he'd go to these big auditoriums, and he'd fill them up. He said it was insane out there.
Yeah, no, it was nothing. Well, he was so entertaining, you know. That's like
that great posing routine, yeah.
Yeah, it's like this guy Ramsford Smith. I don't know if he's on YouTube or not. He was this great. He always placed like fourth or fifth in the short class in the UK, but he was booked all the time because he did that pop dancing routine, and it was awesome. You could watch him all day.
Yeah,
it was just so different. But it was crazy. But it's funny. Another Chicagoan who I ran into over there and got to be friends with was Serge Olivia.
Oh, really?
Was I don't know when this was, but we were in Holland at some gym together, and he was from Chicago area, and we got talking, and then must have been there a few days, and all I remember was we were in this gym, and he knew the owners really well; they're great people, and he takes his chain off, puts it around my neck, he goes, "Hey, Larry, wear this for me while I work out," and I was like, you know, first I was flattered as hell, right?
Yeah,
and then. And then I couldn't believe how heavy that thing was.
Yeah, that big gold medallion, right?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I was like, wow, maybe I need to wear this around the clock just for
build
my neck up or something and stretch.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yes, that's wild. Insane. It was insane.
So what year was that? That was when Sergio was still really big, huh?
That'd be like 80. I think that might have been 83 or 84 when they took us to Holland.
Okay.
And took us to Holland, and we were doing that tour yet. So we went to that gym there. And so we went to this gym in Holland, and that's where he had us. That's what got to meet him for a little bit and hang out. He was awesome. He was awesome. Okay. It's funny, though.
Did you meet Serge Nubre also?
Matter of fact, Serge Nubre brought me over to Paris for 1 week or 2 weeks. I can't remember. But that was insane. That was insane because a super nice guy. And I remember training in the gym, in his gym, for a couple weeks before a show. Can't remember what show it was. But all the French bodybuilders were like walking zombies. They were so shredded.
Really?
They were so carb depleted, John. I thought they were just going to fall over. I was talking to them, and their eye sockets were, you know what I mean? They were just so depleted.
God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how he trained, if you got to see Serge train, because I heard he trained really different.
You know, I don't think I got to train with him. He put me up in this hotel. He told me where to go in the morning, where to eat, where I can go. But he took me to some shows that some of his guys were in. But we never got to train together.
Okay.
But I remember the funny thing you told me was I was so different than a lot of the guys he brought over, because I was really interested in seeing the country and seeing the sights.
Yeah.
And he said everyone else, like I remember Jeff King's interview, he just wanted to train and go to sleep.
Right. They drove by the Eiffel Tower. Okay, we saw it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, I was a complete opposite. I just, like I said, I don't know if I'd ever make it back. So I just wanted to see stuff.
What were some of the highlights out there? Like what do you really remember standing out from what you saw?
Oh, you know, just seeing the other countries and the countryside and like getting over to Holland, walking through with Amsterdam and seeing the red light district. I even got to do a stint in Australia for, I think I was there a week or two.
Oh, really?
Guy brought me over. Yeah. Yeah. I was friends with, one of the girls who competed and she knew of this guy who did some promoting. So he brought me over, got me on on a TV show and took me around the But I felt kind of bad about that trip, though, because you know how sometimes bodybuilders show up and they're not in their best shape?
Yeah.
That was probably my one. Yeah, I should have been in better shape for that one. I felt really bad, but but it was fun. Yeah, but just getting to see, matter of fact, near the end of my kind of career, because my shoulders was starting to give out and injuries. And, you know, you can only knock your head against the wall so many times and then thinking, okay, how long can I keep doing this? Because So near the end, it was more about seeing more of the world than doing the shows, you know, because I think I got to about 14 different countries and
I was just having
fun. I was single and it's like, you know, why not? Right.
Yeah. Now, did you ever think about going over to the NPC or were you kind of like what Jeff said? He just was making so much money and he was doing so many appearances in Europe and stuff that it wasn't really worth it to start over in the NPC.
Pretty much. Yeah. I was pretty satisfied with the way things were gone and to start over might have been, you know, I don't know what would have happened. Plus the way those guys were, you know, I had to get, I don't know how much bigger I'd have to get just to maybe make it out of the NPC Illinois, you know?
Yeah, right. The way
those guys were going. But, there was this one other story about, we're talking about things I remember. This guy in Germany who brought me over and didn't know a thing about it. He asked me if I wanted to stay in his brothel. I was like, what? I said, so he brought me by this place, this house of business. And, you know, at 23, you're thinking, wow, this would be pretty awesome, right? But no, it was pretty rough looking. It was
really, yeah,
it was pretty rough. And I never forget that guy had me there for a week or two.
That's where you stayed?
Never paid. No. I ended up staying there.
Oh, okay.
I didn't stay there. So I remember he never paid me, and I kept asking him, hey, Helmut, are we going to even up soon? He goes, oh, yeah. He ended up giving me my money at the gate at the airport when I was leaving. So, yeah. I know it's like some of these promoters, man, either can't part with the money or
Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah, I know. It's crazy. I told you I had some crazy stories.
Right. So which show do you think you were at your best, Larry? Like which shows were the most memorable out of all those contests you did?
Oh, that 82 Junior America, I felt really good at.
Felt really solid
at that.
First big win. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big, you know, national win like that. And then I think at the 83 America, I was pretty good.
Yeah.
It's funny, the year, because I ended up moving out to Arizona. And the year that Lance and I trained together for Lance Strayer, and I trained together for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And the year he won the pro show, the pro universe,
yeah. I think it was 86.
Yeah. Of course, that's the year I took second, I think, Sammy.
Yeah.
I came in a little smaller, but I was like shredded at that. But, mm-hmm. you know, then Sammy showed up.
How did Sammy look?
That's what, Sammy looked great. He looked great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dark and, you know, he looked good. He looked good. So mm-hmm. no complaints, you know. So, but, yeah. Yeah, you know, you learn, you try different things. And, you know, it's funny because I know you'd ask a lot of these other bodybuilders on your talks about moving to California and changing up mm-hmm. their routines and all that. And, you know, it's like it was such a good environment at quads and in Chicago and hardcore and,
yeah.
you know, knock on wood, seeing good results. So
mm-hmm.
so I just never felt, you know, and I say felt the need. I wanted to go out there and see what they were doing, but, you know, maybe liked it at home.
Yeah, yeah. What did you end up doing for a living there for when you got back from Europe and all your travels and stuff?
Oh, man, I got to think back. Well, funny, when I got back, well, actually, after I won the WABA Worlds in 85, that's when Lance invited me out to Arizona to train together for the 86 universe, that's right. And we were working for a supplement company.
Oh, okay.
So I went into sales with a supplement company.
Oh, nice.
For a few years. But yeah, they went out of business. It was called Sportstar. And then after that, I got into some backup software sales. And now I'm doing in-home personal training. And I also do some Photoshop editing. And I'm in the photography a little bit. And mountain biking.
Cool.
I'm doing a lot of mountain biking, too.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
Are you still in Arizona?
I am, up in we're in Scottsdale. It's funny how all us Chicagoans have taken off, right?
So you and Lance and Glenn were all around, probably in Arizona around the same time, right?
We were, as a matter of fact. I never trained at Hoppy's, though. He might have moved away before I came out.
Okay.
I don't remember seeing him very often. But, Glenn was so good to see where he ended up. I knew he would someday, seeing him in those teenage shows.
Yeah, I was so glad when he won that America too. I always admired him when I was a teenager. He was winning all the shows too.
Oh yeah, trust me too. When I was a teenager, he was winning the shows.
Right.
I was in, darn it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And then I see in '94 you did the Team Universe, right? The very first one they had, the drug test of Team Universe.
Right. I took a 7-year layoff. I think my dad had passed away, so I kind of lost my mojo. And then, a few years went by. I thought, well, I'll give it one more shot. And I made that. And then went back and did the show in Chicago. I think I ended up getting like fourth or something,
mm-hmm.
fourth or fifth.
Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't. Yeah. And I was like, so I gave it one more shot, and that was it. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I think we're done.
Yeah.
But, you know, with shoulder injuries and stuff, right?
Okay. Did you ever get your shoulder operated on?
You know, I didn't. It's I've learned to work around it. It's actually pretty much both shoulders are pretty bad. I'm surprised. I mean, haven't had that type of stuff with all the heavy lifting?
No, knock on wood. My lower back gives me problems, but my shoulders have been good.
Oh yeah, I can't even bench. I can't do a bench at all anymore unless it's like,
wow, really?
It just hurts. So I just do all dumbbell stuff, and that seems to be okay.
Yeah. Okay. Are you still training regularly now, Larry?
I do. About 3 days a week, but I'm also, I incorporate, it's a little different, you know, about 45 minutes, and some days it'll be like a kettlebell workout, or I do a mountain bike 2 or 3 days a week, and now I'm just trying to maintain it, you know, 60 years old, right?
Yeah, so you just turned 60 this year, huh?
A few days ago, yeah, trying to get used to it.
A few days ago, wow, happy birthday.
Thanks, yeah, just trying to get used to it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. How'd you feel about turning 60?
Well, considering still in really good shape, knock on wood, feel pretty good about it, and also feel good as opposed to the alternative of not turning 60. So
right, exactly.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately,
a lot of people have never made it, right? Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of bodybuilders from out here that, you know, like, and then ones I competed with, like Kowak and Vin Comerford, and a lot of these guys from back in the day.
Yeah, but we were just talking about Sergio and Serge Dubray. They're no longer with us.
Oh yeah, yeah. And, you know, so Yeah, it's like, hey, I'll keep taking it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I'll keep taking it. But no, it was pretty funny. It was some good runs, you know?
Yeah, you had a great career. I'm looking over all your contests you did, and it's amazing how you just went from the local level right to the national level, and then you're, you know, world championships and Mr. Universe and all that stuff. So you had a really good career. And spent a lot of time in Europe and stuff. So that was a great experience.
It was. Oh, thanks, John. Yeah, it was definitely a surprise. And I just wanted to keep riding it, you know, because like I said, you don't know how long it's going to end. And actually, yeah. That was in 87, the last time, and I've never been back there. So it's
really
true to form. I'm hoping to, you know, still in touch with people and, you know, thanks to the internet. And it's really cool. But I haven't made it back. But, you know, hopefully someday I want to show the kids and the wife where I've been.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's good you enjoyed it while you're out there and you had the chance to experience it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's why. Matter of fact, you know, some of the experiences, too, I don't think I mentioned, like this guy brought me into Ireland, and I remember landing and seeing the soldiers with their machine guns standing at the, you know, entrance. And I was like, what the heck is it? You know, I was like, what am I getting into here?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's wild because you're in your early 20s and you're traveling all over the world and you're seeing all these different places. So that was really cool.
Yeah. And it was back in the time, though, when some of these places were a little suppressed. It was a little, you know, a little scary, a little questionable. But
right.
Fortunately, it went okay.
Yeah.
So I can't complain. But no, it was fun. It was fun. Yeah. Matter of fact, a funny one of those seminars, I remember we were, this one I was just doing on my own, and the guy who was bringing me to it, we were late. And he dropped me off at a corner, and I'm running to the door, and I know these people have been waiting. I felt bad. And, you know, when you're on stage, you look way bigger than when you're, you know, just standing there, right? So I come running up. I have this jacket on, and this guy at the door of the gym, he goes, hey, mate, slow down. The bloke ain't here yet. He's looking right at me, and I'm like, I know, I'm a bloke, buddy.
That's funny.
And he had his look on his face like, you're the guy we're waiting for?
This is it?
And I would think he'd be way bigger, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's funny. It was a hoot. So, there's stuff like that that, you know, go on and on. It was just a
blast. Yeah. Well, Larry, I want to thank you for joining us and telling us these stories. And like I said, I grew up admiring your physique when I was a teenager in Chicago, and you were always like one of the top guys from that area. So it was great to see you do so well in your contest. And I'm glad we got a chance to finally talk and go over your career.
Oh, well, John, I appreciate you calling me and getting me the interview. And you're motivating a lot of us. I see your photos and how good you're looking. You're still doing photo shoots. And I'm like, man, keep it up, buddy.
Thanks.
I know it gets harder as I get a little older, you know?
Yeah, it sure does. I'm trying to keep that old age away.
we got to get John Cetrone to tell us his secrets, huh?
Yeah, no kidding. He's the man. That guy was unbelievable.
I know.
He still looks good.
Oh, yeah. I saw his pics and I listened to his podcast. But this was awesome, though, John. I appreciate it. It brings back some cool memories.
Yeah, it sure does.
I love what you're doing with the show, too.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Following, it's fun to relive.
Yeah, I'm going to keep it going.
All right, John.
Larry. Well, we'll stay in touch, and thanks again for coming on the show. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, you bet. Take care.
All right, you too. Take it easy.
All right, thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks again to Larry Bernstein for coming on the show and telling us his story. And as I said, next week we will be joined by 1982 NPC USA winner Dale Ruplinger. So you want to join us for that show. Really great interview with Dale. He was very, very intense, kind of reminding me of Dorian Yates. So that'll be fun. All right, before we go, I want to read this chapter from Lou Ferrigno's book. I'm not sure what the book was actually called, but Pat Comer sent this to us, and the name of the chapter is called The Turning Point. Lou says, despite my personal problems at home, I was somewhat surprised to learn that I did have some value as a person in terms of athletics. This may seem obvious to those who have seen me compete in professional football, the Superstars Athletic Competition, or the World's Strongest Man events, but back in the mid-1960s, you would have been very surprised, as I was, by the discovery. I've always enjoyed playing stickball in and around the streets of Brooklyn when I was growing up. For those of you not from the East Coast, stickball is not unlike baseball, only you play in the streets as opposed to a ball diamond, and you use a stick, either the broom handle or a sawed-off hockey stick, and you try your hardest to whack that ball as far down the road as possible. It was a very popular pastime in Brooklyn, and I remember the old men used to sit out on their balconies like they were witnessing a World Series and cheer on the local stickball hitters. Almost from the start, I got the reputation of being a hitter. That is, a guy who could really tag any pitch that came my way and send it into the orbit. Whenever I'd come up to hit, all the guys out back, the outfield as it were, would scurry back as far as they could in order to attempt to corral one of my smacks. They seldom did. This gave me an incredible surge of self-esteem that I'd been denied in so many other areas of my life. As a result, I became more confident in my athletic ability and, to my surprise, quite popular among my peers for stickball, which in turn led to my being recruited for Little League. I enjoyed baseball and I was assigned to play first base, and I actually was quite good at it. But my real talent was hitting. I think I became proficient in hitting because of my hearing impairment. I honestly believe that it caused me to hyper-develop most of my other senses, and actually sight was one of them. I could see every pitch that came my way, with the result that very seldom did one go by me. I should also mention that if I had any natural athletic ability, it came by as a result of my father. He was an exceptional athlete himself, so I had a good genetic disposition towards being at least moderately successful in athletics. Ironically, whenever my father would come to see me play in Little League, I would invariably have a terrible game. I would tense up, sweat, and be so nervous because I knew that he was watching and he just waiting to criticize me for something, that I would try too hard and always perform badly. I just couldn't focus properly on the task at hand. Whenever a pitch would blow by me for a third strike, I'd look over at my dad and he'd just shake his head in disgust. "You'll never make it as an athlete," he'd tell me afterwards. And then he'd go on about how if he were playing, he would have smacked every one of those pitches out of the park. I just nodded in agreement, hoping that by doing so, I could keep him off the more painful topic of how inept I thought he was. It was about this time that an interesting thing happened. As I was walking through the kitchen one day, I noticed that my dad was looking rather intently at a picture in a magazine. Not used to seeing anything that would keep him riveted like that, I came closer to see what it was. It turned out to be a photograph of former movie star Tarzan Johnny Weissmuller, along with Maureen O'Hara. "Gee, would you look at that physique on that guy, Louie?" my father queried. "Now that is a well-built guy." He was right. Weissmuller, who was shirtless in the photo, displayed a very broad-shouldered, rugged look, and there was no disputing the fact that he was a very well-built indeed. "That's a real man's body," my dad said wistfully, and then he left the room. I liked the look that Weissmuller exuded, not unlike the rugged looks of the superheroes who adorned the covers of my comic books in those days. I remembered his image for a long time afterward. The next time I saw a physique that resembled Weissmuller's was when I attended a special summer camp, and I witnessed one of the counselors working out. He was a bodybuilder, and his arms and pecs were incredible. I used to forego a lot of the typical camping amusements and pastimes just to go down to his cabin and watch him work out. Picking up on my interest, he showed me a few exercises and how to perform them properly. Then he told me about bodybuilding and how it required tremendous dedication. But if you were willing to apply yourself, you could literally transform yourself into a Superman. Even for a youngster with 85% hearing loss, I was literally all ears when he said that. I can remember the first time I ever picked up a barbell. The feel of the cold steel in my hands and the firm but gentle pull on my biceps that shook and quivered like Elvis Presley's legs during his heyday as I slowly contracted my muscles against the resistance. Looking back, it was a love at first sight type of thing. I knew at that moment that when I returned home from summer camp, I was going to be using my father's old barbell set, which had been gathering dust in the Ferrigno family basement for as long as I could remember, in a way that had never been used before. I vaguely recall my dad working out as I was growing up, but it mainly consisted of attaching a barbell plate to a towel and then placing one end of the towel over his head in order to perform neck exercises. My intentions were to go way beyond the merely rehabilitative. I wanted to be both strong and admired like my heroes from the comic books, and more recently in the muscle magazines. Above all else, I wanted to be big. I came upon my first muscle magazine innocently enough. I was passing a newsstand, and there on the cover was a bodybuilder named Steve Reeves. I did a double take. The man looked incredible. To this day, Steve Reeves still has my all-time favorite physique. With huge broad shoulders, thick pecs and arms, and a tremendous V-shaped back that tapered down into a waist so thin, even a hornet would have been envious. I offered the shopkeeper 4 of my comic books in exchange for this muscle magazine. He accepted, and a deal was struck. Coincidentally, that same night, one of Steve Reeves' Hercules movies was playing on The Late Show on television, and it just blew me away. His muscles moved and twitched like the shoulders of a Clydesdale, and he carried himself with such poise and power. I read, reread, and reread again the muscle magazines I'd bartered for and worked out that night with a renewed sense of purpose. I awoke the next morning with a ravenous appetite, not for food, but for knowledge. More information on building muscles and developing a physique like that of Steve Reese, to continue to trade him comic books for muscle magazines, and then as soon as I got a new issue, I'd run home with it and go into my room and read it. I'd pore over it as if every issue was just for me. And I'd learn more and more about how my body functioned, which exercises affected which body parts, and all the hows and whys of training for size and power. I found an old mirror in the basement. It had a large crack running through the length of it, but still, it served my purposes perfectly. Within a matter of months, I had built or had constructed other pieces of equipment that I read about in the magazines until I fashioned a fairly respectable home gym. I'd work out 7 days a week and perform as many exercises as I could in an effort to really build big and powerful muscles. One day, my dad offered to drive me down to Joe Weider's store to buy a bench press and some additional weights. This was in exchange for helping him paint the house one summer. And I couldn't wait to get there. After all, this was Joe Weider's store. Joe Weider, the man who owned and published both Muscle Builder and Mr. America magazines, the man who had trained every single bodybuilding champion since 1946, including Steve Reeves. My heart was racing, and it seemed to take forever to get to our destination. We finally pulled into the parking lot, and I beheld for the first time the building that was to become my personal mecca. Once inside, I was amazed at all the equipment that was actually available for bodybuilders. Instantly, I had another daydream of how all this equipment would look in my own home gym. Man, let me tell you, seeing that image and how that equipment could contribute to my bodybuilding gains fired me up for several weeks. Once there, I picked out a good bench press along with a pair of 50-pound plates and a pair of 35s. My dad went inside to pay for the equipment while I loaded it into the trunk of our car. It was then that I had a typically wicked thought from adolescence. Why not keep loading the plates into the trunk? I did, with the result that the gas tank from my father's Oldsmobile was actually touching the springs. When we got home and popped open the trunk, Dad saw the additional plates, far beyond what he paid for, and he hit the roof. I'm a cop, Louie. I arrest people for this type of thing. It was at that moment that I felt some empathy for people who steal to support their addictions. The truth was that I was addicted to pumping iron. I would have done anything to get bigger and stronger. However, I was not without some sense of morality, of right and wrong, and I knew that I had just committed a terrible wrong with the accidental thefts of those barbell plates. Moreover, I fully expected to get severely reprimanded, grounded, and made to sheepfacedly return the additional plates to Joe Weider's store. Worse yet, many of Joe's champions who were featured in his magazines month after month worked there, men like Harold Poole and Bill Grant. They would know that I stole the weights, that I was a thief, and I had brought some shame upon the family. I fully intended all this to happen, but then my dad just smiled and walked inside. The weights stayed. I had a funny feeling develop inside of me when this happened, and strange to say, since I was the one who had deliberately overloaded the trunk with the weights, it had to do with a feeling of disrespect creeping in toward my father. I knew what I'd done was wrong, and that I should be made to atone for it once it was discovered. However, once it was discovered, it was quickly and deliberately forgotten. I later returned the weights myself. Still, despite such temporary lapses in ethical matters, I never let up in my training. There's something to be said for being cognizant of having brought about changes through applied reason. For one thing, it reveals to you that despite what others may say or think, you possess the capacity to make things happen. I will remember a line spoken in a Bruce Lee movie. We are unique gentlemen, and that we create ourselves. Through long years of rigorous training, we forge our bodies in the fires of our will. Although the line was spoken in reference to martial artists, it could have been easily applied with equal validity to bodybuilders. And I noticed slowly but steadily, to be sure, that my self-confidence was slowly beginning to increase. After all, I'd learned something of significance about anatomy, physiology, and kinesiology, things I'd never learned anything about, or at least not in any practical context, when I was in high school. I saw how I could improve my physique, and then I busily mapped out a program that would bring about these alterations. And more to the point, I was successful at what I did. Soon, members of my family, as well as people at school, had noticed that my body was changing, and with it, the way I comported myself and expressed my opinions. No longer was I the wallflower. I actually thought that my opinions should carry some weight, as after all, they were no longer the empty-headed bobblings of some deaf and dumb guy. These were the carefully considered opinions of a guy who got things done, of a young man who was diligent, never missed a workout, tenacious, who would fight through the pain of adversity 7 days a week, come rain or shine. practical, who would determine what body parts needed the most work and then modify his training schedule to hit those parts exclusively, and who was successful, who desired to bring about positive change and then single-handedly made it happen. Here was a young man who looked better as a result and who was far stronger and healthier. This, in essence, was a new Lou Ferrigno. Soon I was able to add more equipment to my home gym. Quick to arrive were a vertical leg press machine, various dumbbells, and my favorite, a lat machine. Not a professional lat machine made with the proper bushings, high tension cables, and heavy duty steel construction so much, as a lat bar connected to two high pulleys by the length of cable that attached to a bar that held weights. However, to me, this lat machine was it. And truth be told, I had some of the best back workouts ever with that machine. As my body started to develop and my confidence began to bloom, I became a zealot for bodybuilding. I'd explain to anyone who was interested exactly what happened when he did a specific exercise for a certain body part, how incline presses stressed upper pecs, how concentration curls added peak to biceps, how chin-ups thickened a back, and so on. Soon, I garnered a reputation as a person who was very knowledgeable in the field of bodybuilding, if nothing else. Despite seeing the transformation that had come over their son, my mother and father decided to come down on my new pastime. "Louis, you'll never earn a living by building muscles," my mother used to tell me, while my dad would just make gestures like I was sick in the head or even attempting it. I remember one day, after months and months of training, I finally got to the point where I could strict curl a 100-pound barbell for 6 reps. This, to me, was a considerable achievement. Wanting to show my dad that all of my training did serve a purpose, i.e. it made me stronger, which even he could not disapprove of, I called him downstairs to watch me. "Hey, Dad, watch this," I exclaimed proudly as I took a firm grip on the barbell and slowly stood upright, resting the bar across the front of my thighs. When I then began to curl that monster, not 6 times, but 8 times, I finally put it down. My biceps felt as though somebody had just taken a blowtorch to them. I was proud of myself, and I'm sure my expression suggested as much to my father. A strange look came over his face. "Wow, that's pretty impressive, Louis," he said, which made me feel great. "Let me see how heavy that barbell really is." My dad walked over to the barbell and took a grip, picked it up off the floor, and held it on the front of his thighs as I had done. For him to have said that word impressive meant a lot to me, as he'd never said it before. I felt good. My father then slowly started attempting to curl the weight. He moved it up 1 inch and, struggling, lifted 1 inch more. "Ah," he grunted. "Boy, that is heavy, Louis." I nodded, the smile widening on my face. "See, Dad, even though I have my problems, my weight training has at least made me a stronger person," I said with pride. "Sure, Louis," my dad said. And then, with a huge laugh, he proceeded to curl that 100-pound barbell 17 times in succession. He'd been playing possum. I could still hear his laughter as he then dropped it down on the floor, and the sarcastic tone in his voice as he added, "Yeah, that weightlifting has really paid off for you." Then he left the room. I burned. I hated being tricked, and being tricked by a parent is a particularly hurtful type of trick, as it also takes away any source of solace or recourse that most parents can offer their children if they've ever been duped by an outsider. Once again, I would have to rely on myself alone to recover from the shot. I vowed right there and then that I would get stronger. So strong, in fact, that on his best day, my father would never be able to best me in any strength event I decided to perform. But I would show him, and anybody else who doubted it, just how powerful and productive bodybuilding could be. All right, so that was from Lou's book called Lou Ferrigno's Guide to Personal Power, Bodybuilding, and Fitness for Everyone. So I want to thank again Pat Comer for sending that over to me. That was really, really great. All right, so that's the show for today. Again, I want to thank Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Join us next week when we will have as a guest Dale Ruplinger, 1992 Mr. USA overall champion. All right, everybody, take care. See you next week.